Well, I'm reluctant to draw connections without knowing the intentions of the Russian government. There is a very large military exercise taking place in Belarus and Western Russia right now, the Zapad exercise, and this launch could be linked with that. The exercise is based on a scenario involving armed conflict between Russia and Western countries. And obviously, if such a conflict were real and if it escalated, that could lead to the use of nuclear missiles. So it's possible there's a connection, but I'm reluctant to say so for sure because I don't know for sure.
The launch and, of course, the missile was launched from the Plesetsk launch site, and it landed in Kamchatka, where they have a proving ground. So, and probably flew over the Arctic, given you know the trajectory and how far it is. This kind of maybe underlines how important the Russian Arctic is for the Russian nuclear deterrent, doesn't it?
Russia is the largest Arctic country. Very large parts of its territory are located north of the Arctic Circle. And Plesetsk, which is their main ICBM testing site, is in the Arctic. It's roughly 800 kilometers north of Moscow. And you're right, the trajectory of the missile would have taken it over a great deal of the Russian Arctic. I haven't looked at it on Google Earth, but it may have gone over some international waters, but not over the territory of any other country. But it does certainly show that you know the Arctic is important to Russia's nuclear deterrence. Most of its land-based ICBMs are based in the Arctic, and most of its submarine-based ICBMs are on vessels that are based on the Kola Peninsula near Murmansk, which is also in the Arctic.
This comes, of course, as you know, Russia is conducting this big military exercise, Zapad 2017, and over today and yesterday there was a big show of force also in terms of Navy drills, artillery fire. The Russian military was apparently exercising, recapturing an island in the Arctic, and driving off an enemy from there. Is this just part of normal thing that the militaries do, or is this Russia also sending a signal to the West?
Well, with the Zapad exercise, Russia is definitely sending a signal to the West. It's engaged in a huge war game where the hypothetical opponent is NATO. So there's definitely a signal there. In terms of Arctic operations, I'm not so sure. The Arctic is hardly the optimal place for armed conflict. It's extremely remote. The weather conditions are often very, very dangerous. And both Russia and NATO have not seen any real possibility of conflict in that region. You have to remember also that militaries prepare for every scenario. This is what they do. They devise different hypothetical situations. They prepare plans and they engage in exercises. When you have a really big exercise like the Zapad exercise, it does have a political intention behind it. But smaller exercises, tests, are pretty much just the normal course of things.
Hmm. Now, last week you testified at the House of Commons Standing Committee looking into this hypothetical scenario of a North Korean missile strike. And if I understood correctly, you oppose Canada joining the U.S. missile defense program in its current state. Yet you also advocated for Canada to consider arming its future surface combatant ships with Aegis-class weapons that are basically a form of shorter-range missile defense. Can you explain a bit your position?
Well, the first thing is that the United States has not officially requested Canadian permission in ballistic missile defense. There was a request back in 2004 from George W. Bush, and that was rejected by Prime Minister Paul Martin, and there has been no official request since then. So, you know, it's a hypothetical question as to whether we should join. We haven't been invited. The other thing to say is that the United States does not require Canadian assistance for missile defense. They have their radar stations in place. They have their interceptors in place. And they also have an obligation under Article 5 of the North Atlantic Treaty to engage in the collective self-defense of any NATO country, including Canada. So joining missile defense is a hypothetical question. I haven't advocated that Canada buy Aegis-class technology for our Canadian surface combatants. I simply made the point to the members of Parliament that there are other things that could be considered as potentially useful steps other than joining a system that we have not been asked to join. And certainly the equipment that goes on the surface combatants would add a new capability rather than simply providing Canadian political support to an existing system, which would be all that we would be giving if we were to join missile defense.
How would it work? Does it mean that given the range of these missiles that Canada would, in case of a threat, for example, from North Korea, would have to deploy these vessels closer to North Korea to be able to intercept these missiles?
The Aegis-class vessels are designed primarily for defense against aircraft. These are anti-aircraft missiles. They have a longer range and are capable of targeting satellites and ICBMs that are within 400 kilometers or so. But I don't envisage that we would be acquiring Aegis class technology to defend Canada against North Korea. It's more the sort of capability that you would want to have on ships if you were participating in a coalition operation against opponents that had sophisticated aircraft and missiles, and so in a theater like, let's say, the Eastern Mediterranean, where you're dealing with Syria and Russia, an Aegis-class vessel would have a little bit more capability than Canada's current frigate fleet. Yeah, I think the important thing we need to remember here is that there's been a lot of strong rhetoric in international affairs over the course of the last year, particularly since Donald Trump became president. But in terms of actual activities, we can see that responsible people are still exercising restraint. Russia is certainly building up its military, which degraded very badly during the 1990s and 2000s. And Russia is certainly beginning to flex its muscles on the international stage. But I have no concern about an actual full-scale armed conflict between Russia and the West. And in terms of China, we see an awful lot of restraint also, which makes sense because China is the world's largest trading company, and economically it requires stability on the world stage. And even Mr. Trump, despite his bluster, hasn't actually done anything particularly dangerous, at least not yet. And North Korea, well, North Korea has always used excessive rhetoric. They are developing a nuclear and an ICBM capability, but it's not clear that they are planning any kind of preemptive attack. They're first and foremost, I suspect, seeking to develop a nuclear deterrent to protect themselves against potential opponents like the United States. That would be rational behavior. And as long as people are acting rationally, the world can stay a relatively safe place.